We are live at Twin Peaks out in Madison today for the pregame show, the award-winning pregame show, I should say, on 102.5, 106.3, The Game, the award-winning pregame show presented by The Beast Unleashed and by Parbin Tractor and Equipment, joined by former Titans receiver Derek Mason.
What's up?
Chris Sanders.
What it do like, man? You doing all right?
Doing well, doing well. Good, we got a game today, the 4-8 Titans, who they flash these graphics up there of in the hunt, and it's like the Raiders who stink, and
Raiders.
The Jets who stink, and all these teams. Oh, Pittsburgh who stinks is in the playoffs, and here you are not even in the hunt. You've had such a bad season, and we will get to the game. But, of course, the big story today as we start is the passing of your former teammate, Frank Wycheck, yesterday at the age of 52 years old. Frank is in the team's Ring of Honor. He is also in the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. And Frank Wycheck, one of the first true stars of the Tennessee Titans of the Nashville era of the franchise. You guys knew him much better than me. Chris, we'll start with you.
Sure.
You know, your thoughts, again, under what are just tragic circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough. You know, I was in church, and I got out of church, and I saw a whole bunch of text messages. And once I got it, I called Corey Curtis, and he told me that, you know, Frank Wycheck passed away. And the first thing that came to my mind was when was the last time I talked to Frank? And I'm not trying to make this a soap opera, make somebody feel sad, but I just went back to me, when was the last time I talked to him? So once I understood that he passed away, I wanted to make sure I talked to his family and make sure they were doing okay. But just looking at it overall, it's a sad, sad situation. He's 52 years old. He's got, you know, he's got two daughters. He got three grandkids. And it's just sad that one of your teammates, but also one of your brothers, is not here with us today because he lost his life.
Yeah, it was just a gut punch, you know, hearing that, you know, first thing, you know, you sort of encounter the first thing in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. That's not news that you think you would get, but then you get it, and it's just like a gut punch. You don't know what to say. Nobody has really any information on really what happened. So you just left to, like Chris said, you left to reflect. I started calling people, texting people, and they were just as floored as I was because – it started trickling out, and you know, I didn't want to. I presented when I text people, I wanted to present it to them like it wasn't real. Like, did you hear this? It's not like, oh, he passed away. Did you hear this? And you know, they were just as flabbergasted as I was, and it was a gut punch to them as well. But like Chris said, then you start to remember, you know, the moments and. You know, Frankie was always one of those guys that, you know, when I did see him, I loved, like, seeing him. Yeah. When he didn't come to, like, certain events, I'm like, where's Frankie? Where's Frankie? Where's Frankie? You know, texting, hey, you coming? And, you know, Frankie, sometimes he would text back, sometimes he wasn't. But, that, you know, people get into their lives, so it is what it is. Because I remember the last time that I reached out to Frankie, Eddie was having a dinner. And everybody was saying, Frankie was coming, Frankie was coming. So I'm excited. Everybody's here except, you know, Frank. I'm excited, like, Frankie's coming. And didn't come, so I ended up texting him a few times. He didn't text me back, but he texted me back, like, a couple days later. Was like, listen, he's like, I'm sorry, man, I planned on coming. But, you know, I'm in Chattanooga. I wanted to see my grandkids. I got, you know, caught up with them. And I was like, all right, great, you know. But I was looking forward to seeing you, kind of like everybody else was. But Frankie was just – you know, Frankie was one of those guys that, and there are a few guys on the team, like Chris, B-Hop, Kevin, Zach. When I see them, I enjoy, like, seeing. Yeah. It's just, I enjoy, absolutely. For whatever reason, I don't know, I enjoy seeing them. Frank was one of those dudes, like, I just, every time, just having to, just give him a big hug. And, you know, one, it was to make sure he was okay. And, you know, but it was, because Frankie was genuine. What you saw is what you got.
100%.
He wasn't trying to play something. He wasn't. He was just a genuine dude. And, you know, what he did on the football field, I mean, we can go back and look at when we know what he did for this organization and how critical he was, along with Chris and Blaine and Mac and Eddie, when they got here to Nashville. It was like, okay, this foundation is built with Bruce. You know, and these guys. But Frankie was one of those guys,
absolutely.
Man. So, it was hard to hear that like yesterday.
And then also, you know, when we came here as the Houston Oilers, we changed our name to the Tennessee Titans. And I know this might seem corny cliches, but I looked at what the definition of what a Titan means. It means this. It means a person with great strength, intellect, and importance. I mean, that's Frank Wycheck right there. I mean, he had great strength to fight what he was fighting daily. I mean, and I, you know, I'm not a doctor with CT. I don't know nothing about that. But to have great strength to fight that every day. And then we talk about intellect. His football IQ was outstanding. It was very, very good. You know, he had a situation. He understood how to run routes. He knew how to do those things. And then the thing about it is the last word is importance. He was a very important piece of this Tennessee Titans franchise. And I'm not just saying it because he's gone, but that's the reason why Steve McNair had a chance to develop because of Frank Wycheck.
Now, I think back as a fan to those early days, and you guys, I mean, it was like, and I was talking about this earlier today, that if you're 13 years old, I think it's hard for me to think that you would understand what it was like that 1999 season. I mean, this town was on fire. You know, it was like immediate too, and it felt like for a lot of that, like Frank was really front and center, you know, that he was doing all the shows and he was always in the commercials and he was always doing the events and the Special Olympics and it was almost like I look back to that era of Titan football. And Floyd once told me that the concern inside the front office was not, you know, do we have leaders on this team? They were worried that they might actually have too many leaders. Mm-hmm. They're like, we got too many good guys on this team. Teams aren't built like that now. You know, it's always, there's always drama. There's always gossip. There's always, this guy's unhappy about this. This guy's mad about. Those Titan teams never had any of that.
Well, because we, I mean, and Chris can attest to this too. Yeah. We grew, man, we came to that outside of Joey Kent and Layman, because they both were UT grads. So people knew those two guys playing at UT. So people in Nashville knew of them. But besides that, we had a bunch of guys that never really spent any time here in Nashville. So we move here and we all just kind of grow up together.
Yep.
You know, we're spending the bulk of our times together. And, you know, I told the story on air and on Caroline Will and D-Base. It's like, you know, when we moved here, Chris is coming from Ohio State. I'm coming from Michigan State. Joey, UT. So you got these big programs where things were different. They were done a certain way, and they were upper, you know, they were on class with all of D1 or big universities. Then you come to Nashville and it's like, we in trailers?
Trailers. I know.
We got 10 shower heads and it's 50 dudes? But we only got 20 lockers,
yes.
And it's 50. Like, literally,
yes,
there were 20, like, 20-something lockers, and you're talking 50 dudes. We had to double up in lockers.
But remember Vanderbilt, too.
Yes, Vanderbilt. We had to get dressed outside. Once we put on our pants, we had to get dressed, shoulder pads and everything, outside the locker. No lie, Jared. No lie. So you're talking about going through all of that, trailers, you know, having food catered in little, you know, whatever they call those things, you light them up, the pans that you light them up, they're lined up outside of the meeting rooms in trailers, like six trailers put together. I mean, I had never saw anything like that in my life.
And we had practice in the parking lot.
And we had to practice, yeah. And Coach Steckel, I got a chance to talk to Coach Steckel, which he will be on today.
Oh, my gosh.
And thank you for that, Jared, because you allowed him to give him space today at 4:30 to talk about Frankie some. But, yeah, we were talking about that situation when we played the Minnesota Vikings, where we couldn't practice the whole week because it was iced out and it was wet. We had to practice in the parking lot. Literally, in the parking lot. You do that in high school. Not in the NFL where you got your owner's a billionaire damn near. It was just like, but I would never change any of it. I would not change one bit because it allowed us to bond as a team.
And we made it work.
I've never been a part of a team. And me and Baltimore, that was great. Those guys were great. But it's different when you grow up with people.
Mm-hmm.
And you all are, you know, I don't care if you Steve McNair, Frank Wycheck, or Derek Mason that's just getting drafted. We all in the same locker room together. We all are a part of this five shower head deal where the shower is flooding out all the time. We were all a part of it, and nobody thought they were bigger than the other person. That's what made us so good. And Frankie was a part of a huge part of what we were able to do for those, you know, from 99 to like 2000, 2004.
And we made it work, D. I mean, look at the cast that we had in that receivers room. We had you, we had Joey Kent, we had Dyson, we had Bird. We had a lot of cats that can play.
Yeah.
I mean, we can play. But if Derek caught two and I caught one, nobody was complaining.
Or Frankie caught eight. No, it was like, okay.
No, 10.
Yeah, 10.
No, 10.
I do wonder about this
10. When it comes to Frank, though. Like, Frank was older than you guys.
Yeah.
Not by a lot, but he was older. Mm. And I think by the time you got in the league, like, he was kind of well established as the guy that would lead the team. And what was that like, getting to know him at such a young age and kind of following the lead that he, as an older guy, maybe was setting up with Bruce Matthews for guys like you and Steve McNair and Eddie George?
I think it was good for the younger guys. One, Chris touched on it, you know, with Steve. It allowed him to grow. Frank Wycheck and Eddie George were the two most important people outside of the offensive line. We had a hell of an offensive line back then. But Eddie and Frank were key in Steve McNair's, you know, growth in this offense, because we were going to run a football effectively with Eddie in that offensive line. And then you throw it to Frank, 10 times out of 10, it was going to be a catch and it was going to be a first down. Mm-hmm. That allowed Steve to build trust. And then he started to build it outside of others. But when I got there, listen, it was like, it's Frank Wycheck. And as a receiver, when you come in, you're thinking like, man, why are they throwing it to the tight end? But then you actually see this tight end play, and you're thinking like, okay, I see why they throw it to him.
Yeah, and
this dude makes every catch.
And he wasn't the fastest.
Exactly.
He wasn't the best athlete on the field, but just like I said, he was very, very smart, and he understood the void to catch the ball and run after the catch. If you look at when we played the Raiders in Memphis, one of the big plays of the game is when Steven there rolled out and he throws it to Frank Wycheck and he hurdles a guy and I think he gets an end zone or gets close to the end zone. But he was just one of those guys that made Steve McNair better by his intellect. And when you have great intellect and football IQ, he makes everybody around you better. And that's what I love about Wycheck.
He knew how to find the holes in the zone.
What did you think about the connection between Frank and the city? The fact that as soon as Frank retires, he walks right out, goes into radio, and immediately is a humongous success there. I kind of felt like Frank was the first of that era to hang it up and to move on to another, you know, kind of profession inside the game. And as a fan, I think that allowed a lot of fans to be able to connect with the team and understand more about the game, because Frank Wycheck was so accessible for fans.
Well, he was the first guy from that era. If you're just talking about, you know, the 99 when we really started to get it in gear until, you know, 04, Frankie was the first guy that actually was able to be successful on the field but then go outside of the field and be just as successful as well. Unfortunately, I wasn't here to see it, like, when it all happened. I was already gone. But then you come back and you hear Frankie on the radio in the morning. And, you know, you hear him with Plaz and all these other people, and it's just like Frankie's just growing and growing and growing. So he was really – then he becomes the, you know, with Mike Keith, he becomes the, you know, the other voice on the Titans radio. So this, you know, his persona and his whatever just started to get bigger and bigger, you know. And he just became – he became even more beloved after he played.
Yeah.
You know, because
– which is hard to do because he was pretty beloved when he played. Yeah.
Absolutely. But I think because of his, you know, how he explains things, his honesty in describing things, you can only get that from a guy like him or from a player. And he knew exactly what he was talking about. And I think that's why it worked so well with he and Mark and those guys. Now, they may have gotten into it air, but it worked really well with those guys. And then it worked well with he and Mike Keith on the radio side for the Titans.
And he was a professional. I mean, with everything he did from the football to, you know, arguing with Mark, he did everything right. So when you look at a player that gets done with football, I would model him because he redefined his brand. He wasn't just known as, okay, I'm the tight end, I'm the H-back, and a great football player. when he got off the field, he went right into what he was supposed to be doing, and that was broadcasting and doing radio.
We continue on the pregame show, again, live out at Twin Peaks in Madison, where they'll have wall-to-wall sports, 29-degree drafts. Right now the drafts are at 27 degrees. We'll continue on with a special Frank Wycheck-themed pregame show. And, of course, Coach Steckel in 15 minutes, John McClain in less than an hour. As we remember a Titan legend in Frank Wycheck, the pregame show continues. Live from Twin Peaks in Madison, it is the pregame show, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Of course, we move the chains, as we always do. So we start with first down. What are you doing over there, Chris?
Man, I'm just
he put on his headset.
Man, I got somebody had me in a headlock, man.
So we start on first down.
First down.
This is from the 1997 Tennessee Oilers highlight video on the future of the Tennessee Titans.
The Tennessee Oilers and head coach Jeff Fisher can take pride in their accomplishments of 1997. But the key to future success for the Oilers lies in the continuing development of their talented young stars. Surrounding Eddie George and Steve McNair again next season will be tight end Frank Wycheck and wide receiver Chris Sanders.
Oh, why you cut it off, man?
That music. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, the NFL films?
It sounds like they taped it in the garage.
Hey, that's 1997 for you. How does that make us feel that that was 1997?
Good Lord.
Now I could take my iPhone, shove it up, you know, whatever, and record it, and it would sound better than the 1997 VHS that ran there. The young, talented players around Steve McNair and Eddie George include tight end Frank Wycheck and wide receiver Chris Sanders.
Champ, that makes me sound old. 1997, that was 27 years ago.
You want to know something?
What?
You are old.
Wow. But I'm fine.
Do you feel left out, Derek, that you weren't included in the 1997 young players in Christmas?
No, I wasn't.
But he's going to be a Hall of Famer, though.
I wasn't. I just got there. So I was like, who is this guy? Who is this guy from Michigan State? No. I had like eight people in front of me in the receiver room. So, no. But it's good. You know, we laugh about it. But it's good to hear that.
Good, because that takes us to second down.
Second down.
Oh, my goodness.
This was the 1998 Tennessee Oilers highlight video.
Pro Bowl tight end Frank Wycheck has led the Oilers in receptions for the last three seasons. Over his career, Wycheck has caught more passes than any other tight end in team history. His 70 grabs were also best among all NFL tight ends in 1998. With his power and sure hands, Wycheck will be a vital element in the Titans' attack in 1999.
There, steps up, fires into the end zone, and a touchdown! Wycheck, what a sensational leaping catch in the end zone and a boat!
Well, at least Chris wasn't included on that one. Yeah. Sorry about that.
70 catches.
That's unreal.
That was unheard of for tight ends back in that day, like 70 catches. Now 70 catches, like, man, that ain't a good year.
Yeah, 70 that's like catches, 70 catches, like that's like Nick Westbrook.
Exactly. Like 70 catches, that's nothing.
Hey, you know who would take 70 catches, though, right now? Chigakonkwo.
Oh, absolutely. He would take 70 catches right now. But that was just, I think, you know, that pretty much encapsulated, you know, who Frankie was. He was the besides Eddie George. And listen, we had Chris. He was the deep, you know, ball threat, whatnot. But Chris still could run every route there was. But Frankie was, he was the passing offense. As much as people would look at it today and be like, oh, no, the tight end being your passing offense. No, he was our passing offense. And we were a good team, a damn good team, operating from that standpoint. And even when he wasn't, you know, in you know, 2000, when he wasn't that guy, he still was key in what we did. Absolutely. From an offensive standpoint. It wasn't like Frankie was left out. He still was. He was Steve's first down guy, shorthand guy. When Steve would get into a jam,
second down,
he'd look for Frankie, and Frankie would make the catch. So even though we started getting more pass catchers, his importance didn't change to the team.
Yeah, and it helped Steve McNair out, you know, immensely. I mean, because the thing about it is, sometimes when the read would break down and it was kind of confusing, then he knows that he could depend on Frank Wycheck. And when you have that security blanket, it's going to make you better, because even though you might not go to progression, he knew for a fact that Frank Wycheck was going to be there. He just understood the game. He wasn't just a guy, okay, I'm just going to run out there and run some routes or just block, you know, a edge player. He made sure that Steve McNair could trust him, and that's exactly what he did.
That takes us to third down.
Third down.
Well, we already went over 97, mm-hmm. gone over 98. Mm-hmm. 2000's not in there because in 2000 the video didn't talk much about Frank. It actually talked about you two. Mm-hmm. So, what do you think's
99.
Next?
Tight end Frank Wycheck was a favorite target, making him the team's leading receiver for the fourth consecutive season. He extended his streak of games with at least one reception to 55, en route to his second consecutive Pro Bowl appearance.
Touchdown!
I bet Mike Keith thought that was the money right there.
Y2K check.
Four consecutive years leading the team in receptions, wow. I think is pretty incredible for a tight end, especially a tight end who, at the time, the contemporaries, you know, Shannon Sharp and Tony Gonzalez, I mean, again, you guys showered with Frank. I didn't, but I got to assume that.
Wait, hey.
I'm just saying. In those trailers.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that I don't think that his body's like Shannon Sharpe's body or Tony Gonzalez.
He wasn't this, you know, because you look at, you know, Tony and what he was able to do in his career, obviously Shannon Sharpe. They were sort of hybrid tight ends at the time. You know, they look like damn near basketball players in a sense. But you know, they were able to, you know, do their thing on the football field and things that we didn't necessarily see. Even if you go back to the great tight ends, Isaac Newsome and Buckets and all of so not Buckets, but what am I thinking? Chicago's old coach.
Dicker.
Yeah, Dicker. Yeah. When you talk about Dicker, and there are a lot of others. They were good, but from a, you know, athletic standpoint, they were nowhere near.
Yeah, they were
you
more
know,
like
exactly.
sixth offensive lineman that could
absolutely. And Frank, he was like that hybrid guy. Came in as an H, you know, came out of college as an H-back. They don't even use H-back anymore. Now it's more, it's just a running back. He was the H-back, a fullback, you know, then a tight end, then an extension of the offensive line. Right. So he was a jack of all trades in our offense. And I think it helped him because he understood blocking assignments.
Yep.
He understood where Steve wanted to go or didn't want to go, and he understood the defense. I need to find holes in his zone defense, or I know when they're playing man. And that helped Steve out a lot.
And if you look at the tight ends that they have now with Chig and Wiley, there's always going to be a knock on them. You got one that can block or one who can't catch or one who can't do these things. But when you have a situation with Wycheck, he can block and he can
he
run
do everything.
If you
he can
do everything. Will Levis could really use a Frank Wycheck right now.
Yeah.
Like it's somebody to just constantly. Which takes us to our fourth and final down.
Fourth down.
One of my favorite stories, Floyd told it maybe three or four times. Mm-hmm. One day Frank Wycheck walks into his office and says, I should be the highest paid tight end in the NFL. Floyd takes out the book, I guess, that has all the contracts, opens it up and says, you are the highest paid tight end in the NFL. Get out. And he left. Coach Les Steckel will join us coming up next as we continue to remember Frank Wycheck on the pregame show right here live from Twin Peaks in Madison on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Normally we go inside the playbook where we take a look at what the Titans need to do to win this kind of game. So with that, I figure why not we just get the offensive coordinator to take us inside the playbook. And Coach Les Steckel joins us now on the pregame show. Of course, Coach Les Steckel was a big part of the Titans offense, Titans offensive coordinator at the end there in 99 in the Super Bowl with you guys. His wide receivers coach all over Chris Sanders back in the day. And I'm sure Chris is a better man because of it. Coach Steckel, absolutely. It is awful that it's under these circumstances, but thank you for joining us today as we remember a great teammate to these two and a great player for you back in the day.
Yeah, I tell you, Jared, as Derek and Chris know, I give them all my favorite players. I give them nicknames, and I nicknamed Frank Philly because he was from Philadelphia, and I grew up and was raised in that part of the country. And I got to tell you, Philly was not only the player but the person. We had a great relationship, and it all started, Jared, when I was coaching with the Denver Broncos, and I was in a staff meeting with the scouts, and Wade Phillips walks in during the draft time and says, well, we've covered every position on offense but the tight ends, and Les tells me he has no one he's not interested in. And I stood up and said, well, there is that one kid at Maryland I like, but he just isn't big enough. And it was Frank Wycheck. Fast forward 2 years later, we're scrimmaging the Washington Redskins in Knoxville. We're getting ready to play the Redskins, and we're the Houston Oilers. And we announced we were coming to Nashville 2 years before we came, which was a great PR move, of course. And, you know, as Chris can tell you, the place was empty, right, Chris?
It was like two people there.
Yeah, they asked me, I should say, yeah, it's two people there, exactly. And, you know, we scrimmaged, and after the scrimmage, and after the game, I went over. I said, boy, that kid, Frank Wycheck, I said, he's put on some weight. He looks great. I said, if he's ever out there, let's grab him. And he did. And I had a chance to work very closely with Frank and Derek and Chris. And, you know, I have to tell you, Jared, to be on the radio here, I just want to say that it was a complete joy to have people like Frank and Chris and Derek and Eddie and Steve, and there were so many others. But I got to tell you, as I told Derek earlier today, it was the most unselfish team I've ever been on, and I was on 13 different teams during my 32 years. And we worked at it, though. I thought the culture that the coaches set, particularly Mike Munchak and Sherman Smith, two of the greatest guys I've ever worked with. And I think if you ask Chris and Derek, they enjoyed coming to work. They enjoyed walking in that building or the trailer that we had for 2 years when we were the Road Warriors down in Memphis and in Vanderbilt. But there were many moments, and I wrote down a few, Jared, if you don't mind me sharing, that Frank and I shared. Are you okay with that?
Absolutely, Coach.
Well, first of all, the one I'll always remember was during the two-minute drill that we used to practice on Saturdays. And there was a time that we paused, and he just walked over to him and he said, you know, Coach, I think of you all the time up in the press box when we're driving to win games in the two-minute drill. I said, what? Nobody's ever said that to me, and no one ever said it to me before or after. And he said, I just think about all the pressure you feel like you're under during that time. And I said, you know, I can't thank you enough, Frank, for saying that. But there's a lot of pressure, but it's a great rush, and I loved it. Or I remember the time in 1998 we were playing at Vanderbilt, and I came down out of the press box, and I'm running on the field, and Frank comes running over to me, starts yelling and screaming at me. And I go, what the heck is this all about? And he said, will you please tell the band to stop playing their music when we're on offense in the huddle? I can't hear the plays. And, you know, I thought about, you guys remember playing those games in Vanderbilt? I mean, it was like playing away games. You know, we'd walk in the stadium, it'd be black and gold. We'd walk in the stadium, be purple and blue for the Ravens. And, you know, that was crazy. But I'll never remember Frank yelling at me. And then one day he gave me a phone call. I was coaching with the Buffalo Bills, and he just said, Coach, I got my 500th catch, and I want to thank you for all the time you spent with me on the jug machine, and I have a football for you, and I want to make sure you get it. And that really meant an awful lot to me. That was special. And then the time you guys met, I remember we played Atlanta, and Chris Chandler and Frank were buddies down in Houston, and they used to play golf all the time. And I said, Frank, how would you like to throw one more pass in Chris Chandler? Because we're gonna keep him from throwing a touchdown pass. The defense is going to blitz him every down. And he said, yeah, I'd love it. And I said, okay. So we put in a special play. And I'm not sure who he threw it to, but Frank threw a touchdown pass that game. And afterwards, he did tell Chris that I had one more pass than you. So I thought that was pretty much fun. I remember also, just the word tiger. As you guys know, we had code words for the pass play. So during the 2 minute, all Steve had to do was yell out a code word, and nobody had an idea what war or NASCAR or, squirrel or, tiger or whatever. They just didn't know what we were talking about, but we had a code word and everybody knew the play.
Hold on, Coach. I want to quiz it right now. Chris, what was NASCAR?
It means you go fast.
Okay, what does Tiger mean?
Tiger was the option route for Frank.
See, that was for Frank. It was the option route for Frank. It told us to get out the way.
Did I get a code word?
That's exactly right.
Tiger told us to get out the way. Frankie was going to catch the ball. All right, that's all we need to know.
Yeah.
Now, Coach,
what was really fun about the offense, and I heard what the guy said, and we opened it up a little bit more. It was a challenge those 2 years down in Memphis and Vandy. And I've said this before to you, Jared. If we had that stadium, Nissan Stadium, for three straight years, we could have possibly been a three-year Super Bowl team. And, I know when I felt led and called to leave and go to Tampa with Tony Dungy, we had a great talk. Mike Heimerdinger and I had a great talk. And, Jeff asked him to use the playbook that we had. So he had to learn the system. And look what happened the following year. They went to the AFC Championship game. It was a great group of unselfish players that were working hard at it. And those two guys right now on your show and Frank were tremendous assets and tremendous teammates to get us there. But there was one moment or two that I still want to mention. We were at training camp when our youngest son, Luke, was coaching with the Titans, and Frank came over and stopped my wife, Chris, and I, and he said, Coach, you got a minute? And the three of us stood there for 30 to 45 minutes, and he opened up his heart, and I always felt like players were comfortable with me to do that, and he was sharing about his challenges mentally and, the challenges of getting hit and having concussions and so forth. And he said that his radio experience was going to probably come to an end. But we just had a long talk, and he just shared as much as he possibly could. We talked about Philadelphia. His dad was a police officer there, and et cetera, et cetera. But Chris and I really enjoyed that moment with him and how open and transparent it was. But I tell you, the moment I'll always remember was after the Super Bowl, guys. Mm-hmm. I was the last person out of the locker room in Atlanta. But there was one other person, and he was waiting for me. It was Frank Wycheck.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So that was a tough night. And he just grabbed me, and he said, come on, let's go to the bus. And the two of us walked to the bus, and when we got on the bus driver said, I was told to stay. There were two more people in it. I guess it was you two. And he and I went to the back of the bus and sat and talked, and that's it. We sat on the back of the bus and talked on the way back from the Super Bowl. And, So I just want to say this. It's sad in life how we honor folks after they pass. But anyone who's listening, and I say that from a sincere heart, would you tell that friend or that family member or that coworker, or yes, maybe that teacher or coach who's made a difference in your life, would you tell them thank you now and not wait? So I challenge every listener to do just that.
Well said, Coach. We all have our own stories of Frankie and people saw Frankie on Sundays or on Mondays when he had an opportunity to play, but they didn't see, what we saw throughout the week, the hard work, the funny Frankie, all of the stuff that sometimes don't get shown. So those words and your stories about Frankie, I'm sure, people that were watching the Titans and following the Titans then, they appreciate those stories because maybe they never heard those stories. And they don't know Frankie the way we know Frankie. But your stories allows them to know him just a little bit more than what they did, you know, prior to his passing. And as, and like you said, it's fortunate that times like this, this is when we truly, you know, honor someone's past and what they've done in the world or in this situation with the Tennessee Titans in the city of Nashville. Because it just wasn't for us, the team, what he did for the city and how he endeared himself to the city and how the city just loved, like, Frank. They loved Frank. So just to hear your stories, I mean, it's wonderful.
You know, I mean, all these points are fantastic. And just kind of listening to what you guys are saying, and I want to say this to you, Les Stuckel, you're one of the reasons why I coach. And the reason why I coach is because I love to build relationship with people. And just listening to the relationship that you have with Frank Wychep, it's not about football. It's not about X and O's. It's not about catching a touchdown. It's about relationship. And you just hit it right on the head. The people that are important in our life, the teacher, the friend, and the people that you work with, man, tell them that you love them because you just never know the day. You know, and Eddie George said something on the TV the other day. He said this. He said, don't wait to give flowers to somebody when they pass away. Give flowers to them when they're alive. So, you know, I'm learning from this situation that I got to do better because I know sometimes we get involved with our everyday lifestyle and forget about telling ones we love. But I just want to tell these guys on this stage, Derek, Jared, and Coach Stuckel, I love you guys.
Yeah, well, we love you too. It was a great time.
Absolutely.
And, you know, for this this old Marine to get choked up, but I still remember that moment where it was just Frank and I and the only two on the bus, and we had a great relationship.
Coach, I do wonder this question. As you guys kind of grew this whole young offense up, including these two guys and Eddie George and Steve McNair, and just how important Frank was in all of that, both from a production standpoint to help get the young quarterback and the offense some success, but also as a veteran player with his work ethic and attitude, how much that helped the young group out.
Well, you know, when you say that, the first thing I thought of, and Chris, you know, you were there. When I first started coaching Derek, Chris, I was the tight end wide receiver coach. Back in those days, we had six coaches, and then they went to eight. And I mentioned to Chris when I saw him at the YMCA a while back, I said, I don't know if I could coach anymore with 24 coaches on a coaching staff. But, you know, we had jug machines. And in Houston, if you remember, Chris, every day I
Absolutely.
Shot 50 bad to you, to Frank, to every receiver, to every young man that even tried out for the team. And we wanted to give them 50 bad balls. And Frank would be the first in line. Hey, I want to be up first. And then, sure enough, it's like when I worked with Shannon Sharp. He would stay after practice and catch 100 every day. I couldn't get over how committed he was to be a great player. And Frank used to do that periodically. He'd say, can I stay after and catch 50 more? And he just wanted to be a great player. And talk about reliability. There were times where, you know, we would call a play. And, you know, you guys know. You hear people on television talk about target this guy or target that guy. The quarterback makes the read on the defense, and when the huddle is broken, there's 3 to 5 guys that are primary receivers. We just don't know after the snap of the ball what the defense is going to show us, and the quarterback has to recognize it instantly and then go to the chain of command, a 1-2-3 progression kind of thing. But Frank was always working hard if he was the fifth guy in line or the first guy in line, and that's what impressed me about him. He just played hard, took a lot of heavy hits. I still remember, guys, if you remember that game in Pittsburgh, it was the last game of the year when we had to fly to Pittsburgh before the Y2K. Remember, all our computers were going to get shut down, and we had to go stay in Pittsburgh 2 extra days, you know, because the computers on the airplane would go out of whack and, you know, the plane would crash or something. And so we go, and here we beat the Steelers 41-38. And, Jared, I know – we've talked about Floyd Reese, and he always stood up behind me in the press box for the games. And he turned to me after the game. He said, boy, you had their number. But I got to tell you who had their number was Steve and Frank that game. And I remember one the first time we scored, I said, now we're down inside the 10. Frank, as soon as you break, turn and look for the ball just like the jug machine and Steve forward as hard as you can. And he did, and it was our first touchdown, and later we scored 41. Or, Derek, I'm smiling. I'm thinking about the Jacksonville game down there where you returned a punt and just iced the game for us. And, those were fond memories that you just don't forget about. But Frank made a difference for Steve when he started in his career as an NFL quarterback, you guys as well. But I know Frank was the security blanket, that's for sure.
Coach Deckel, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your words. And thanks for just kind of the insight there and maybe things that – and I think it's really cool to be able to talk to these two guys about it as well, about what was really, the golden era of Titans football that made Nashville the sports town that it is today. And Frank was a huge, huge, huge part of that. Coach, thank you so much.
Appreciate you, Coach.
Lastly, I'm going to tell you, he loved Dunkin' Donuts just like me.
Hey, Coach Deckel, I was open on the last play of the game. I'm just letting you know, I was open on the last play of the game.
Well, that's why you weren't the one who was sitting with him here talking to him on the way out there. That's why Frank was. Coach, thank you so
love
much.
You, Coach.
Jared, in 32 years, I never met a wide receiver that wasn't open. You know what I mean?
And I can attest to that with these two. Coach Les Deckel joining us on the program,
you, Coach.
As
love
always,
you,
here on the
great
show.
Dude,
we'll continue on with the pregame show live from Twin Peaks out here in Madison, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Let's go inside the playbook, which we have not done any of yet in today's game, as we're remembering Frank Wycheck. And again, John McClain will join us at the top of the hour. Let's just mix all the playbooks in together at one time.
All right.
I'm worried about today's game, guys.
Who?
I'm worried today. Who? I'm worried that tomorrow is going to be put a paper bag over your head, do not tell your friends that you root for the Titans kind of day after what we're about to witness tonight.
Oh, man.
Are you guys as worried as I am? Are you expecting this as much as I am?
I'm not. I just have this feeling that not that the Titans are going to win, but it's not going to be the embarrassment that many believe it's going to be. And I get it, rightfully so. You look at the Titans, what they haven't been able to do. Then you look at Miami and what they are able to do and the players they have and the players the Titans don't have. So, conventional wisdom would tell you that team's going to kick that other team's bottom by a lot of points. But for some reason, I don't see it that way. But if it does become a game, like you said, Jared, a paper bag game, then that whole, we love Vrabel from the management and everything else, that may change very quickly because, as you put it, Jared, it's Monday Night Football. Everybody's watching.
Yep.
You don't want to get embarrassed like that. It's two times worse than what happened to them in Philly with AJ. Y'all get beat down on Monday Night Football,
was watching that.
Exactly.
They just saw the highlight.
It was just absolutely
watching their own game.
Absolutely. But this, you and the Giants are the only two games in town. And I don't know who plays first. I think the Giants play first, and they make same time. So they're the same time. So you just hope that some people are watching the Giants. But if not, if you get embarrassed that bad, then there's a new conversation that needs to be started.
This reminds me of, I think it was last year, the Dallas game where everybody was talking about Dallas was going to come in and beat the Tennessee Titans. Everybody was hurt. Everybody was thinking that, Byard was going to play. He did play, and he got two interceptions. I think it's going to be that type of game to where everybody's going to say they blow him out, but it's going to be a closer game than what people think. Because you got to remember, I know the Tennessee Titans have a bad offensive line, they're struggling in the secondary, but they're still NFL football players, and on any given Sunday, somebody can beat them. I'm not saying
Monday,
there you go. But it all goes back to what Tua's going to do. Tua may act crazy and throw three interceptions, and the Tennessee Titans are right back in it, even though they might not have the personnel. So, even though that Miami's the better team, you throw two or three picks and have a scoop and score, then things change really, really quickly.
Can I just say this, though, as far as the Titans are concerned, and I just want to get this out there because we haven't talked about this since our last pregame show. Who was right about the special teams coach?
Man, stop.
I mean, you're right.
Thank you. Joe Retro can't say that.
Well, I don't know why Joe can't say
yes,
that.
Yes, you do.
It's like,
he can't admit that I know more about football than him. He can't do that.
I mean, you know more about that position or you were right about that position.
Hey, I know more about football than him, and apparently I know more about that than Vrabel did, because I told Vrabel, hey, man, you know, you got to make a change here. He's like, we got a great coach.
I think deep down Rex wanted to give you some kudos, but he just couldn't do it.
Can't do it.
Yeah, he can't do it.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
It's like Chris Andrews.
Well, I give you credit, man.
I'm kidding. <Yeah. laughs> I am worried that tonight's going to be ugly. And I will do this. I make this promise right now. Uh-huh. If they lose close, I'll give them what I call the Vanderbilt moral victory. Uh-huh. Like, so if Vanderbilt plays Georgia close, it's like, good job, Vandy. Whereas, like,
nice job,
you know, other SEC teams, go, it's like, hey, man, you guys expect to win the game.
Uh-huh.
I, you know, moral victory. If this comes down to the wire on the road, I'll give them credit. I'll give Vrabel credit. I'll give Will Levis credit. I'll give them credit, you know, if this is close. It's just not going to be.
Go ahead, D.
I understand what you're saying, and there is a high possibility that it will not be remotely close. But, again, I just look at this from a standpoint. You know, they've had to sit and spew in this for, you know, a couple of extra days, and everybody's saying Miami's going to run through them, and Tyreek Hill is going to have more offense than the Titans do defense. He's going to have more receiving yards than the Titans have offense. The defense ain't going to be able to control it. I've heard all of this stuff, and they're listening to it too. So I just think that if you're not going to play for anything else, because obviously when you get in this sport, you play to win championships. You play to get your money as well. But I'm saying as a team, you play to win championships. You play to get yourself in a playoff, in a position to win a championship. You don't have none of that to play for. So what are you playing for? Each man is playing for contracts. Each man is playing for an opportunity to be back on this team or someone else's team. If I turn on that film, if I'm Mike Vrabel, if I turn on that film and I see guys loafing,
ooh-wee,
guys not giving it their all, I don't want them a part of my team, because more than anything, what you put on tape don't just go to me. It goes to 31 other teams. And if you're in the last year of your contract, or you know you are probably one of those guys that will get cut, there's no way in the heck that I should turn on the film Monday night against probably the most high-powered team, high-powered offense in the National Football League, and see you loafing on no plays. I should see 100% all-out effort. If I don't see that, I don't need you a part of my team.
Yep.
John McClain will join us coming up next as we remember Frank and we continue to do so. Who, by the way, never loafed.
No.
We will do that next. Live from Twin Peaks out in Madison, it is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are live at Twin Peaks out in Madison. It is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. And as we are doing today, we remember the great Frank Wycheck, a Titans legend, who, of course, passed away yesterday at the age of 52. And I said today, guys, I'm like, there is nobody that probably knows the story of Frank Wycheck and the Titans better than John McClain, one who probably knows just as much about Chris Sanders and the Titans and whatnot. And I said, let's bring John on, as we always like to do from time to time. John McClain joins us now on the program. So, John, I want to start right off the top. When you think Frank Wycheck and the legacy that he leaves behind and what he meant to the NFL and to the Titans and to the Oilers, and where do you start?
Well, first of all, I'll start with the first season in which Frank was here, which I believe Chris was a rookie, had 9 touchdowns and averaged almost 25 yards a catch. And there's never been a deep threat in this franchise's history who had the size and speed that Chris did. And I think you had 6 touchdowns and averaged about 18 yards in your second season. And then like Steve McNair and Frank Wycheck and Eddie George, Bruce Matthews, y'all were gone. And the thing I remember about Frank, and I talked to Frank about this one time, and he didn't have a clue. And I believe, and Chris, you'd know this, when Steve McNair was a rookie in 95, Heath Shuler was playing for the Redskins. Yes. The Oilers had a game against the Redskins. They played in Knoxville, and they practiced first,
in Maryville. And so I remember sitting on the sideline with Charlie Casserly, the general manager of the Redskins, and I saw a receiver make a couple of good plays, and he said our coaches tried to move this kid from Maryland to fullback, and he's not a fullback. He's more of an H-back because he's tough. He can run. He can catch. And I said, what's his name? He said, Wycheck. We drafted him in the sixth round. And so they didn't have a spot for him. And I told Floyd Reese that story about what Casserly was said, never thought anything else about it. And then when Frank got cut, Floyd liked him, watched tape of him, and he brought him in, and the rest is history. That was a great class, a draft class, plus a free agent like Frank that came and got seasoning in Houston before they moved to Nashville and became stars. And so that was the first time I'd ever heard Frank's name, because I didn't pay attention to it when he was at Maryland because he wasn't a top prospect. And it worked out pretty well, and I always was amazed at what a great talk show host he was, and also what a great analyst he was and how popular he was. The only person I know that was as popular as Frank Wycheck is Dave McGinnis.
Oh, man, you might be right about that. But Frankie, I mean, we've had several people throughout the day, people coming on and sharing their Frankie stories, John. And you sharing, you know, your early Frankie stories with us as well. And we do greatly appreciate that, because I think sometimes people just get to know the player on Sundays or Mondays, and they don't get to know – it's hard for them to know a player outside of that. But the stories that we've heard, hopefully it gives people a glimpse of who Frankie was. And it's unfortunate, one, that, you know, you didn't get a chance to really – like watch him play, because they had segued out of Houston here to Nashville. But I'm sure you still kept ties with Frankie and the Titans.
Oh, yeah.
In Nashville.
I'll tell you. Let me tell you another great story about Frank. For 13 years in a row, I did a multi-night fundraiser for the Charles Davis Foundation over at the Lowe's. And Jeff Fisher did it every year with me, and he would bring – assistant coaches, and they're like, you're doing what for who from Houston? This is Nashville. And so we did it, and it was a great success. And I had Eddie George, Vince Young, Steve McNair, and I had Frank there. And every time I asked Frank, he was happy to do it. And he showed up early during the, and I would always have the guys that I brought in. Steve Watterson was great. Bruce Matthews did it. And the fans would just line up to get their pictures made with them. And the women, of course, all were excited about Jeff. Everybody was excited about Frank, but Frank always treated people great. He came early, shook a lot of hands, signed a lot of autographs. Back then, people wanted autographs. There was no such thing as a selfie. And he was so accommodating to everybody. And at the end of the night, after we had done the program where I interviewed him and they told stories, and it was like what's said in Vegas stays in Vegas. Dave McGinnis, boy, he's another great one. Jim Schwartz. It was so much fun during those 13 years. And Frank would stay late. He would stay till almost the last person was gone. And I always appreciated that. And I know Charles Davis did too, because they are the reasons the crowds kept coming back for a great cause. And Frank did a lot of charity stuff there. And I feel terrible for his family, his daughters, and everything. It's just such a blow. I know he moved to Chad after he moved to Philadelphia. And I was talking to Bruce Matthews about him today, and Bruce said the thing that he remembered most, I thought he was going to say the Music City Miracle. He said how Frank could run the tight end screen up the middle, and he wasn't much faster than me, so I didn't need to worry about him running into my butt.
Hey, man, first of all, it's an honor to speak to you. I love what you do. I love, you know, covering you and listening to what you're saying.
Thank you.
I want to, and I really mean that from the heart. There's been a lot of
That's just because he said good things about your rookie year. That's why.
And his second year. What
and his second
rookie year.
I just love this guy. you know, you've seen a lot of great tight ends. You've seen a lot of guys that come in the league. Could you rank Frank Wycheck, one of the best all-time tight ends of all time. I'm talking about the top 15 of all time. Could you put him in that category?
No, I couldn't, because there's so many great tight ends throughout NFL history going back decades. And Frank always thought of him more as an H-back, so he moved so well and had such good hands. And he blocked when he had to, of course. He had to block when Eddie George was facing eight-man fronts all the time. By the way, I'm hoping Eddie makes the cut from 25 to 15 and becomes a Hall of Fame finalist now that he's a semifinalist. And Frank would always stick his head in there and gave a great effort. And he was a terrific receiver, and he was tough, and he had good hands that he could run after the catch. And he was like you, Chris. He had his career high for touchdown catches in Houston before he went to Nashville. But yeah, Frank still was a genuine legend in Tennessee and in the Mid-South, and his memories there will never die.
John, you know what I find fascinating is that, you know, and I use C.J. Stroud as an example here, where I think the acquisition of Dalton Schultz was a really, really big deal to help C.J. Stroud out as a rookie. And I do wonder how much from afar you saw Frank Wycheck really help Steve McNair's career as they developed him from a raw Alcorn State, you know, rookie into an eventual league MVP.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jared, and I'll tell you, when a 6'4 rookie comes in and he has blinding speed and he takes off down the sideline, everybody's going to notice it. So he's going to get a lot of attention, especially when he's averaging 24, almost 25 yards catch and has 9 touchdowns. So that would leave, Chris would take off and draw a safety to go with a corner, and Frank would work the middle of the field. Now, Steve only started 2 games as a rookie. Now, they wanted Chris Chandler, and Chris did a great job throwing the ball to Chris. And but when Steve did play, and he made 4 starts the second year, Frank was a great safety valve. He always knew Frank was going to be in the right place. And a lot of times, quarterbacks with not much experience, they want to dump the ball off. And in Steve's case, of course, he didn't dump it off. He was taken off down the field. Nobody wanted to tackle him. But he knew Frank, if it's 3rd down and 6, Frank would be at 7. 3rd and 8, Frank would be at 9. And he was very, very reliable. And he was a cushion for a rookie quarterback with not much experience who'd come from Alcorn and all of a sudden was playing the NFL. Because Steve signed a 7-year contract, the idea was to bring him along slowly because they thought the caliber of the competition might overwhelm him. And a lot of those players wanted Steve to play over Chris Chandler because they knew he had the ability and he was the future. But, you know, the Oilers at that time, Houston Oilers, who were 2 years as Tennessee Oilers, Jeff Fisher was trying to get in the playoffs under the worst of circumstances. Here the team was constantly on the threat to move, and the fans, media was killing them. The fans weren't coming out. And it was terrible circumstances to be in, and yet they were 8-8 in the playoff race. And I think McNair knew he was really dependable, and if I need him, he's going to be where he's supposed to be.
You know, John, last one for you. These guys were talking about it earlier. Coach Steckel came on and kind of said the same thing, that the team, you know, that first moved here was an incredibly lovable team, and it took the city by storm. You know, going to the Super Bowl the first year doesn't hurt, but it felt like it was immediate, and that team had almost no problems, you know, as far as on the field, off the field, that kind of stuff. They said it was so incredibly unselfish. Do you think that the personality that Frank had, the same personality that we saw on the radio and as an analyst, do you think that that is what kind of played a role in building that entire culture that led to those years of success when the team first moved here?
Well, he played a role, but so did Eddie George. Eddie was the hardest worker I've ever seen. You know, Eddie would get 8-man fronts. They just kill him, beat on him, cheap shot him. He never, ever complained. Eddie, Frank, Bruce Matthews have been with the organization 14 years. Blaine Bishop and Brad Hopkins. That team, they had a lot of talent they brought from Houston. And a lot of people up there think, well, they got there in 99 when they were the Titans. And they, whoa, back up 2 seasons. And they forget they were the Tennessee Oilers. I'll never forget the last game when they were the Tennessee Oilers in 98 at Vanderbilt. I was there, and Matthews and Munchak. I don't know if they stole it, but they had as much Oilers stuff that they could carry out of that Vanderbilt home locker room because of old-time's sake, and I don't know if they still have it, but their arms were loaded, and who was going to tell Bruce Matthews and Mike Munchak put that back? And but having that kind of leadership on the staff, I thought Jeff Fisher did a great job. He had a great staff, and Frank was certainly a dynamic leader, a hard worker who would do anything to win, and that's one reason he came within a yard of winning the Super Bowl in 99.
Yeah. Chris decided to remind Coach Steckel, by the way, that he was open on that play.
I was open. I was open.
John McClain. As always, John, thank you so much
thank
for joining
you
us, sharing your memories of Frank.
Thank you, John.
My
yes.
pleasure. Thank you guys for having me. And Chris, great talking to you again.
Hey, always my friend.
There you go, John McClain joining us there. Chris was open. You know what I keep thinking about what's when that? It comes? Because here we are sitting here remembering Frank and all the things he did. Let's just, you know, just imagine that Steve out of the corner of his eye or just had that sense, and instead of the design play to throw it to Dyson, who gets tackled the one, turn, sees Chris wide open in the end zone, throws it to him for a touchdown. You guys win the Super Bowl. Chris's life would be so different.
Just going to hurt my feelings, huh?
You know what I mean? Like, there's no way he'd be able to do this show with us because everybody would be lined up wanting to meet the Super Bowl MVP, Chris Sanders, who got the game-winning Super Bowl.
He wouldn't be at the show.
He'd be on TV.
Exactly,
he'd
be on TV. Yeah, he'd be doing something else.
He'd be on the Jamie Foxx show.
Hey, but Chris said he was open.
Sally Jesse Raphael.
Chris said he was open. Who was an insider, you, Chris?
You?
I said I was open too. I'm sitting there watching Dyson. Like,
we were, because I was coming.
Dyson
out.
Was open too.
He was.
I'm not gonna say he wasn't open. He was open, but man, I think we were in the end zone.
Man, I was in the back of the end zone.
I ran a slant, like a skinny, and so I was in the end zone inside the safety. Chris is on the left of me,
and I went in the back
Dyson
of the end line.
Was on the right, so it was us and then Frankie.
You were covered.
No, I wasn't covered. I was open.
We're going to need to get the film out. We're going to have to discuss
that. Oh, I seen the film. I watched it. I was open.
Coming up next, we'll check in with TD from the stadium. We'll see what's going on in Miami as the Titans try to avoid embarrassment tonight. We will do that. We continue on. It is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We are live out at Twin Peaks in Madison where tonight – the Titans are getting set to take on the Dolphins. Here again, we are live, our pregame show presented by The Beast Unleashed. Zero calories, zero sugar, all the adult beverage fun. And, of course, by Parman Tractor and Equipment, where we'll have our picks to click. So, you guys, once we start talking about this idea about the Titans getting blown out, a lot of people are saying, you know, oh, no, football, anything can happen, anything. Explain to me if the Titans are going to win today. How the Titans are going to win today?
Well, I mean,
I rest my case.
No. Here's the formula. Here's the formula for them to win. Is they got to slow the game up. They got to stick with the run game no matter what. I don't think Miami's defense is that good where they can shut down a run. And if they want to stack the box, then, listen, they got two corners that are really good. But I'm not going to sit here and act like Jalen Ramsey is a shutdown corner.
He's not.
He's not a shutdown corner. He's a dynamic player.
Yeah, but you got shutdown receivers.
But what I'm saying is that I would take a matchup with him and D-Hop, and I would pick D-Hop all day in that matchup. If you're talking one-on-one, that's what I'm saying. If they load up the box, you run. And then take your opportunities when you can, because they're going to try to load the box to stop Derrick Henry, because that's the only way the Titans can at least slow the game down and keep Tua and that high-powered offense on the bench. And when they do that, then you hit them over the top. McDaniel, he may not be as patient if the score is a little bit tight after the second quarter going into halftime. If the Titans can keep the game tight going into halftime or – winning going into halftime, it's a whole different ballgame.
I think it comes down to me. I think Tua. I mean, if Tua gets flustered and throw a couple of interceptions, I think that's going to be huge.
Who's going to intercept it?
Denard Walker.
Come on,
Denard Walker.
Nah, but I'm just saying, I mean, if Tua gets flustered and throws interceptions because he wants, just like Derek said, he's impatient. He wants to, you know, throw the ball down the field. I think the Tennessee Titans can stay in it. Everybody's talking about what Miami's going to do. I know what they're going to do on offense. I know what they're going to do on defense. But if Tua throws a couple of interceptions and the Tennessee Titans run the ball with Henry and Spears, I'm telling you, it's going to be closer than what it is. It's not going to be – they're not going to win by 45 points, I guarantee you. They're not going to win by that. It's going to be closer than what people think.
Oh, I think it'll be bad. I think it'll be bad. No. By the way, what number do I have written down right here?
44.
No.
That's how many yards that's how many yards per game Derrick Henry averages on the road this season. They can't run the ball on the road. They can't block on the road. I've never seen anything like this my entire life, where a team is okay at blocking at home, mm-hmm. and they cannot block on the road.
Well, I told you why that's – I mean, I could tell you why that's the case, and I think I said it before.
What, the firing off the ball?
It's because they can't hear. At home, mm-hmm. you can hear.
But other teams go on the road and block.
But you're talking about other teams that have an okay to good offensive line.
Yeah, yeah.
This offensive line is predicated on if they can't communicate – Their job performance goes down tremendously.
I have a theory. I think the offensive line play in the NFL is at an all-time low. Oh. Like,
I can tell you why it is.
They don't practice.
Yeah, that's the reason.
You flip on all these games, all these offensive lines stink, and it's like, oh, man, they need a better offensive line. And it's like they're paying those guys $30 million, $20 million, $8 million, $20 million, $15 million, and they all stink. But of the worst offensive lines, you're the worst. Uh-huh. That is bad. Like it's all-time bad right now.
Oh, Carolina's the worst.
And you're the second worst of the all-time bad. Boy, you ain't wrong about that one.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. Ooh. They stink. But you're right there with them. Like, you're right there with them.
Not that bad, man.
And that's hard for me, especially on the road. And they're third in the NFL in sacks. The Dolphins are.
41 sacks, baby.
They're third.
And you know who's going to make a point, too, is David Long Jr.
David Long Jr. Because Vrabel.
I want him to have a good game. I really do.
Because of what
Vrabel
said?
Yeah, because of what. Because I didn't, as a player.
He was pissed about what Vrabel
said. As a player, you don't.
I've listened to it.
Yeah, as a player, you don't expect your head coach to, like, single you out like that.
That's what I'm saying.
Because you wouldn't go up there and say, like, listen, my coach keep on calling these stupid-ass plays. Like, what is he doing? Right. You don't do that to your coach. So then why would your coach come back and say, this, like, by name, he's a repeat offender?
Yep.
It's like, and like David Long Jr. said, it gave off this misconception or this narrative that I don't work hard.
Sure.
That I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do.
Especially, and I know that you guys worry about the team and not about money and things like that. But if he's going into free agency and his coach is putting it out there that we can't trust him to stay healthy, that's like a message to the 31 other teams that you can't trust him to stay healthy either. So now it's like, hey, man, you're screwing my livelihood right now by sitting here and saying.
Like, you shouldn't even – as a Vrabel of all people should know, you don't say that about him. There are some things you just don't say about a player unless there's this motive that you're trying to get at. Mm-hmm. And to me – that was completely wrong. Like, especially, again, if you are a former player, you don't do that to one of your guys.
Absolutely.
Like, so I hope he comes back. I hope he has a hell of a game.
What did we say the score was going to be? You said 40?
Well, no. I wrote down 44, and that is how many yards Derrick Henry averages on the road. But if you want to say 44, that's fine.
It's going to be 47. I changed my mind because of this David Long thing. But listen to the quote he said. He said this: you would have thought that I tore my ACL the way they treated me. I'm telling you, that dude might have about 15, 16 tackles, man, because I'm telling you, he's going to try to run through somebody's face to prove a point.
Well, so David Long got hired, got signed, and they asked him.
Well, he got hired, too.
Yeah, he got hired. So they asked him on the press conference. They said, you know, hey, Vrabel kind of singled you and Christian Fulton out as repeat offenders about, and David Long was like, yeah, you know, I don't do a lot of media, and I don't talk about it. I just kind of do my job, but they left a sour taste in my mouth that it was like, oh, you know, I don't take care of my body, or, oh, I'm not – because I'm the first guy in and the last guy out. And so, I mean, I guess I just didn't appreciate hearing that. I was like, oh, my God, he is going to stick it up for it. If he gets the opportunity, he's going to do that.
Oh, of course.
And just like AJ spanking the goalpost last year. Like, that is. And I said to Vrabel a couple of weeks ago in the press conference, Vrabel was talking about how, you know, when I asked him if he was going to change assistant coaches, and he said no, which then ultimately he did change assistant coaches because I was right and he was wrong. But Vrabel was talking about, like, when I played, I didn't blame Rob Ryan or I didn't blame Romeo Crennel or Dean Pease. And I'm like, well, that doesn't mean that because you didn't think that's not the case. Mm-hmm. I said, you said, like, you know, that you never blame the trainers when you were a player, but AJ and David Long have gone other places and don't get hurt. So, like, maybe, like, we should look at this and decide whether or not this is. And so, again, I get your paper bags ready, folks, because when you want to put one over your head tomorrow, then you may not be able to find them. They may be all sold out.
If it becomes a paper bag game, then we got a problem.
Oh, we got a problem.
Yeah, we got a huge problem if it becomes that type of game, because that's utter embarrassment. So you don't want to become the Aints again. You don't want to become the Aints. Mm.
By the way, this just
or
did
the Cleveland.
From longtime Titans equipment manager Haas says Frank Wycheck was a great human being.
I loved Haas.
Yeah, and Haas got to know Frank, you know, like equipment guys get to know, like, certain players more than sometimes the coaches.
So Floyd told me that he always was very close with the equipment managers. I mean, I'll say this. Like, Floyd, take a bullet for Haas. Mm-hmm. Like, because – and I said that one time. I'm like, the way this guy and the guy who maintained the field, Terry Porch, like, Floyd would take a freaking shotgun to the chest for those. I'm like, why? He's like, because those guys do whatever it takes to win a game. Ooh, and then he told me about the equipment guys. He said – the equipment guys are the guys that really know what's going on with the players.
Oh, of course, because they see everything. They have – it's like they're watching television. That's what it is, because how their office is set up, it's like –
and they're there all the time.
Yeah, like in when I went to Baltimore, it was different. We had our locker room. Then outside the locker room, the equipment guys, you know, they were sort of outside the locker room. But guys would filter in and sit down, like – long time equipment guy Ed Carroll. I just go in his office and he and I would just talk, you know, just sit there. When Will was there, Will got to Baltimore, and because he came from here, and I was sitting in Will's office and just talk. They get to know players a little bit more in depth than even the coaches do.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, it's about building relationships, and that's exactly what you do. I mean, you know, especially with Haas, man, we saw him every day and we were in contact with him every day. And, you know, Haas will give you anything. I mean, he'll give you gloves, shoes, whatever, whatever, but it's about building relationships.
Yeah.
Coming up next, our picks to click.
Wait a minute, where's TD at?
Who's going to – we'll figure that out later.
Yeah,
who's going – TD usually joins us, presented by The Beast Unleashed. Coming up next, our picks to click. We'll do that live from Twin Peaks in Madison, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Time for Picks to Click, presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment. Tonight in Miami, the Titans and the Dolphins. Who is going to click today for a Titans victory? Christopher Dwayne Sanders, we start with you.
I'm going to go with Will Levis. I think Will Levis has to play big today. And the one thing I don't want him to do, I don't want him to play hero ball, because you got some good corners out there. You got Ramsey, you got Howard, you got Elliott, guys that are consistent around the ball. And then you got a front that's really good. You got Wilkins, Siler and Chubb that have a lot of sacks. So he's got to protect the football, make sure he doesn't throw interception. I think the Tennessee Titans will be okay.
My pick to click. I'm going outside of the norm here. My pick to click
NWI.
Is one Treylon Burks. He needs to click this. He needs it. He needs to click this game because because they are going to stack the box. 7-8 men, it don't matter. They're going to stack the box.
And they're going to take DeAndre out of the game.
They're prime. Yep. They're going to try to take him out of the game by putting Ramsey on him. But, again, I don't consider Ramsey a hell of an athlete and a dynamic player, but to me, he's not a shutdown corner.
You don't think Howard's better? And that Howard is not a shutdown corner?
It's hard to be a shutdown corner in this league nowadays.
Yeah,
it truly
the rules
is.
Just don't
yeah, because the
it.
Rules, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to be able to have – this is where Treylon Burks and D-Hop, he knows how to do it, but this is where Treylon Burks needs to use his big body and his frame and his speed. And this is where you're one-on-one, a smaller DB. You got to go at him. You have to go at him. This has to be the game that he proves to the Titans that I was worth that pick. Yeah, we've had some troubles with my injuries and everything else and me dropping some balls. But on prime time against two really good corners, you need to prove your worth on this team. He does. And I think this is the game he can do it because they're going to be so concentrated on stopping Derrick Henry and, like you said, stopping DeAndre Hopkins. I think Treylon Burks is going to be the guy that can really benefit from that.
I'm going with Chigakonkwo.
If he gets more than 10 plays, let's say that.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Chigakonkwo.
I get it.
Here's why I'm going to go with Chigakonkwo. I cannot not take the tight end on Frank Wycheck night. Gotta take the tight end. Right. That being said, I need Chig to catch the ball.
He did last week.
No, he did not. They threw one short late in the game, and he dropped it. And then, like, as he was fumbling with it.
I'm glad he dropped that.
Yeah, because it wouldn't have done much.
It would have been a loss of, like, 8 yards.
But he ended up kicking it backwards.
Well, he didn't do that on accident.
It was like,
he
did it on purpose.
He didn't do it on purpose. He did it by accident, man.
Kicked the ball back. He stinks. And I will say this. When I talk about the mistakes the Titans made this offseason, everybody circles Dillon. That's for sure.
Yes.
But the fact that they didn't have an insurance policy for Chigakonkwo, who was not an established NFL starting tight end, was a massive mistake.
Well, I think they looked at last season, and they saw that, yes, he did have an established guy, you know, in that room with him, but he was able to produce somewhat. They saw that talent in him. So they wanted him to be the frontline guy. They went out and drafted Wiley. They brought in Wesco. But it hadn't worked out the way that the Titans, you know, envisioned it. They do need a presence, like a veteran presence, within that tight end room. And had they had one, I think things would be a lot better.
Yeah, they just need a tight end that's consistent. I mean, you need a guy that can make some plays. I mean, it's like, 1 week Chig will make some plays and Wiley make a play. Then next thing you know, they're dropping a couple of balls. And if they just gain some confidence and use their athletic ability, then I think they can definitely make some plays.
I just think, like, again, yeah, they had Wesco and Wiley or whatever. But I'm talking about, you know how this works. Like, the first day of free agency, guys get stupid money. Mm-hmm. And then it really starts to peter out. And then you get towards, you know, once you're on the shelf for about a week, it's like, dude, you need to take what you can get because – that is when the Titans should have signed a veteran free agent tight end who had started in the NFL before, could have done that for like $2 million, and you could have said, hey, Chig's the starter, you're the backup. And then once we learned that Chig couldn't catch the ball, then they make the say, okay, now we're going to put this guy in here who started, and they just didn't think to do that. And I think that's ridiculous. And I think, again, that goes back to the incompetence of the organization. They're just like, oh, no, Chig's good to go. He's fine. And it kind of reminds me, Chig kind of reminds me of Tyrone Calico.
Hmm.
That's a stretch.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Like, athletically talented, yeah. Can't catch, and
just had a hard time catching
once
the
you try to invest in the guy, believe in the guy, it's like, not sure that's necessarily going to work out. Defense, who's clicking? Chris Andrews.
Ooh, I'm going to go with D'Amico Autry. The reason I'm going with D'Amico Autry is because Simmons is out, and you got to find somebody to get to the quarterback. And if you look at that defensive front, the only guy that's really been getting after the quarterback is Autry. I know he's going to get double teamed, but he's got to figure out a way to get to an office spot, make him make mistakes, and the only way you can do that is putting pressure on the quarterback. And I think Autry's the guy that can try to get to the quarterback and make him make mistakes.
Well, I'm going with the secondary, period. The secondary. That's my pick to click. They got to step up and step up big. They don't have to shut down Tyreek. They don't have to shut down Waddle, but they got to make their job. They can't. Tyreek can't get easy catches. He can't just be running, you know, down the sideline by himself. There can't be any busted coverages. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs to know what they're doing. You know, you can't allow him to catch a slant and then go 80 yards. You can't. You know, I know it's hard to do, but you can't. So, to me, this defensive secondary has to step up today. I know what you're saying about Autry. Autry has been playing really good the last couple of games. But along with Autry, I think that secondary has to step up big.
So, I've seen you throughout the show. You've been looking at your alarm system, like, the entire show, the cameras, like, the security cameras at your house. I don't know if somebody's breaking into your house or not. I don't know.
Oh, did
but if you had to bet that house – and all those security cameras that I've been viewing into since you've been opening on your phone. If you had to bet your house on this secondary being able to keep Tyreek from just running down the sideline, would you or would you not?
I'm not putting up my personal items.
Got it. Okay. My pick to click is Shane Bowen, and I'm going to say why. Because this offseason on the Stillman & Company program, I'm sure we'll be discussing what they can do in the offseason to improve and anything else. And I am wondering if we will be seeing Shane Bowen as a weekly guest on the Stillman & Company program, because if today goes bad, he may not have a job next year. I mean, let's just keep it real. Like, this is the kind of game. I said this after the Colts game, you know, a division rival with an obnoxious owner, you know, at your home, you get two punts blocked, and I said, this is the kind of game that gets a coach fired. Well, Monday Night Football against an explosive offense without your best defensive player with a backup secondary, you get embarrassed on national TV. We know your owner is impulsive on firing people when they screw up. With maybe C.J. Stroud coming in next week, we don't know.
Yeah.
This could be tough for Shane Bowen. I'm a little worried about him.
Yeah, but it all depends on what defense he plays. I mean, if he goes out there and start going man to man across the board, then you're going to get toasted.
Then he should be.
That's
without
the point.
A job.
That's what I'm saying. You got to.
The problem is when they play zone, the quarterback just stands back there to boop,
see,
first down.
And then that's they got Nico Autry comes in, and you know Pierre Tart. Those linebackers, they paid a
Weaver.
Lot of money. Weaver comes in.
I was joking
play.
When I said Weaver. You weren't.
Yeah, but I'm saying those guys come into play when you're playing against a high-powered offense like the Dolphins. But, again, you know, your offense has to help you out. They got to help you out. If they don't help you out, I can't ask this defense, which is one of – it's a mid-level defense at this point. I can't expect them, if you're constantly putting them out on the field, I can't expect them to stop the offense every series. So the offense has to do their part. So maybe that's my pick to click, the offense for the defense. The offense needs to stay on the field.
And also, Miami has a good running game now. I mean, I can't pronounce his
name. A-Chain.
Who?
A-Chain.
No, not the other cat. Mostert.
Mostert.
He's got 828 yards now. So – you know, even though they're going to stop the pass, they can't give up them explosive plays with that running back. Because if you look at this, the speed that they have on this team, they can put together a 4x1 relay.
They ain't got speed. That's not speed. That's just speed. Something else. That's not even speed. That's just something else. What they have is just –
it's crazy.
Like, it's just something that you never see on a football field. That much just like
– you think it was better than the Rams when we played them?
Oh, they'll run the Rams in circles.
Those
Rams weren't even that fast.
You had one guy really that was fast.
Ozzie King was fast as hell.
Yeah. I mean, Torrey Holt was fast, but he was 4.4 fast.
For his position, Marshall Faulk was pretty fast.
Exactly. Like but you're talking played. About yeah. all yeah. these guys are.
But A-Chain could two. Dust Marshall Faulk.
Yeah.
Now, Marshall Faulk's a better back.
Yeah.
And can do more, so, but like A-Chain, like if we were in a straight line, you know, that's
like these guys can qualify, they're damn near qualify to Olympics. That's how fast they are.
Crazy.
Our final game day predictions and Mike Vrabel's key to the game, that's coming up next. We are live out here at Twin Peaks in Madison. It's the award winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We're live at Twin Peaks in Madison. It is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chris picks the Titans to win every game.
Uh-huh.
So when we have our official game day predictions, we shall see at the end of our program. Of course, we start Mike Vrabel's key to a Titans victory. Limit the X plays for the Miami Dolphins.
You know, they've got a good scheme and a lot of speed and you know, the quarterback, Tua, does a fantastic job of being able to distribute the football. And sometimes those X plays are handoffs. Sometimes they're short passes. It's not, you know, every single one. I mean, yeah, if you're pressed up on Tyreek, you can guarantee that it's going downtown. But it's not just throw it over your head every time. It's, you know, catch and run. It's good ball placement by the quarterback. You know, and then guys, you know, breaking tackles, and you know they lead the league and you know missed tackles for. So those things will be critical once they have the ball in their hand.
Vrabel talks about it as if they have a chance of stopping it.
Nah, I mean, as a coach, you got to be optimistic. You have to be, but realistically, you know, I just ran across the inactives. I'm even more depressed. But it's the names that you expected to see. You know,
Simmons,
Kristen
Foden,
Simmons, Wiley. You know, but then you look at it, you're like, man, you know what? They might get their anus kicked.
It's bad.
You know.
So here's one thing that bothers me about the game. Is I think it is inevitable the Titans are going to get embarrassed. And I think Will Levis' stat line is going to be something like 11 of 30 for 98 yards and two picks. And it's not going to be his fault. But the narrative that then comes from the game is, he sucks, because that's just how America treats football players. Is like, no, everybody thinks Brock Purdy's great. Nobody, he's got the best left tackle. He's got the best running back. He's got two receivers. He's got the best offensive coach.
He's got a tight end.
He's got the second best tight end.
Uh-huh.
It's like, wow, what's wrong with Kansas City's offense? I don't know. They don't have Tyreek to throw the ball down the field to anymore. Instead, they got these bozos game line up onside. Like, I think that, like, Levis is absolutely set up to fail tonight, and he's going to. And then the narrative is going to start, oh, they missed on that pick, or oh, they stink, or oh. And I'm like, that's not right. That's not. And I totally could see that happening today.
This game just kind of reminds me, I think it was 2 years ago when they played the L.A. Rams. It's kind of like the same.
No.
Yes, it is. It's the same thing.
Derrick Henry broke his foot. We didn't think the Titans were going to win that
game.
That's
even worse. Derrick Henry's
sucks.
In the game. But
that
it's
team
still,
was good.
Oh, my goodness. But everybody was saying that the Rams were going to win convincingly. What happened? The quarterback threw two picks and then what, a pick six with Byard? So that if Tua doesn't play well.
Byard going to be able to pick that ball off today?
See, that's what I'm talking
Byard
about.
Byard can barely pick a ball off in Philadelphia. He ain't picking
no
balls
off. He
got burned.
That was a give me.
He made the play.
That was a
give me.
Yes,
sir.
More importantly, the guys that are replacing Byard are terrible.
Yeah, you ain't lying about that.
Molden is terrible. Wallace is terrible. Hooker is terrible. They're terrible. I mean, there's
Avery.
They're not playing well, let's just say that.
Yeah, what do you mean?
They're not playing well. They're not playing the way we believe they need to be playing in order for this Titan team.
You know,
a wise
former NFL player once told me. He's a guy who'd been nominated for the Hall of Fame a couple of times. He once told me that when he played in the NFL, he would look at games and say, oh, this is a stat game. And you being a Tyreek Hill who thinks he should be in the discussion for MVP. And I'm honestly, he might be like the fourth most valuable player in the NFL.
You're right.
Like Mahomes, I think, is more valuable than him to his team. Lamar is probably more valuable to him than his team. But, like, Tyreek wins more games for his team than Justin Herbert's winning for his team.
No, you're right.
More games than Russell Wilson's winning for his team. So if Tyreek wants to win the MVP – like, this is the kind of game where he's going to try a 300-yard receiver.
This is what could potentially happen, and this may be the downfall of them as well. And this is why, you know, it just gives me this weird feeling. If that is indeed the way he's thinking, like, this can be my MVP game, then you know who else is thinking that way? The head coach. Mm-hmm. And he may press too much to try to get him the football. And then try to get him the football, alienate everybody else to an extent. And then your quarterback ends up trying to make throws that he shouldn't be trying to make. So, like Chris said, you have one or two interceptions.
Yep.
That can change everything.
Yeah, and the thing about it is it's
– They're not going to, though.
But we
– Who's going to intercept it?
I told you, Denard Walker.
Yeah. Hooker's your only hope.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
To intercept the ball.
Just let them earn it. Let them methodically try to go down the field. Just don't give up the explosive play, like one play 76 yards, one play 80 yards, and make them drive.
What do you think about if – I think Levis is going to have a bad stat night tonight. I'm already saying without having seen it, it's not going to be his fault. What do you think about that?
I think there is a possibility that will happen. But I think there is a possibility that – because I understand what you're saying. That because of the ineptness of the offensive line, he doesn't benefit from it. So he can't play the game that he needs to play. But also it could be a flip side where, you know, unfortunately they run up the score and his stat line can be 24 for 35 or 40 with 250 yards but like one touchdown. Yeah. It can be that way too. But neither one would be – in a sense, bad because he's only operating with what he has in front of him.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, I don't want him to try to play like, okay, I'm playing hero ball. Okay, I got Ramsey out there going against Burks. You know, I'm just going to throw it up and let him make a play, even though he's covered. So he's just got to make sure he's smart with the ball and make sure he doesn't try to do something that's outside his element. So if he can do that, maybe he'll keep him in the game.
The final line on today's game, it was originally Dolphins 13. It's now Dolphins 14, which
Damn,
means
why
more
they go
money
up a point?
Because more people put money on the Dolphins to cover the 13 than they are the other
Goodness.
Way around.
So they had to ante up the number.
Yes. So they get more people to bet on it.
Exactly.
So that they, yeah.
So they can at least try to win their money. Yeah.
Right. They don't want to be handing away free money.
And I'm sure there's people still betting on it at 14.
Oh, I think the Dolphins minus 14, I think that is freaking free cash.
I wouldn't take – I don't know if I would take that. 14 points?
Oh, I the Titans,
okay,
the
I wouldn't put a lot of shekels on it.
The Titans can't block. The Titans can't run. The Titans can't pass. The Titans can't play defense. They can't sack the quarterback. And out of nowhere, they're not able to stop the run anymore. Oh, and they got a new punter they're breaking in this game. And the Dolphins have the most explosive offense in the NFL.
That's my
what
group.
Could possibly – and are third in the NFL in sacks. What could possibly go wrong today?
Everything.
Okay.
Tua.
Game day predictions.
Let's go.
I think I'll take the Titans to win. I'm kidding. Uh-huh. All right, game day predictions. Who wins today? Final score and why? Chris Sanders.
I'm gonna go with the Miami Dolphins 31-10, and the reason why I say this, man, the Miami's offense is just so prolific. I mean, you got Tyreek Hill, you got Waddle, you got a great running, some great running backs. You know, because if you look at last week in the secondary, you know they had two wide receivers that got 100 yards against the secondary, and I just think that this secondary can't cover anybody. So I'm going with the Miami Dolphins 31, Tennessee Titans 10.
Oh boy, I say Miami's gonna win. I think they're going to put up 35 points. The Titans are going to get to 21. Mm. You know, it's not going to be pretty at times. But I think it's going to be a close game up until halftime. And I think halftime, that's when the Miami Dolphins are going to open up the game. They're going to win 35-21.
I'm going to go 45-16. Here's why I came with 16.
Come on, man.
The Titans, most points they've scored on the road this year. 16
points.
Three times they've scored 16 points.
So they
points.
Can't get over that 16
so
point hump.
So why would I ever expect them to score more than 16 points on the road?
Because you got faith in them, Jay.
I think the Titans are going to blow them out. And if
the Titans are going to blow them out?
Excuse me, the Dolphins are going to blow them out. If the Titans win today, let me just say this. I think it will be a sign that Frank Wycheck has angels in the outfield.
You never know.
A Titans victory.
You never
That's
know.
That's going to do it for us. We're out of here. The Commodore Hour's next. Enjoy the game tonight. 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Frankie, we love you.
Yes, sir.